He was more than a boxer. He was a symbol of American strength, a hero who carried the hopes of a nation on his shoulders. Joe Louis, the Brown Bomber, stood up to Nazi Germany in the ring and served his country with honor in World War II. He gave his fame, his fortune, and his heart to the war effort. But his most devastating fight wouldn't be against a heavyweight champion. It would be a decades-long battle against an opponent he never saw coming, the United States Internal Revenue Service. How does a national hero, a patriot who donated his winnings to the military, become the target of his own government? This is the story of the patriot and the bill, the champion, and the system that failed him. This is a special Veterans Day episode of Behind the Scams.
Welcome to a very special episode of Behind the Scams. I'm Nick.
And I'm Sue. With today being Veterans Day, we wanted to take a moment to do something a little different. Today's episode is dedicated to a man who fought for his country in more ways than one, both inside the boxing ring and out. The legendary Joe Louis. We also dedicate this special Veterans Day episode to all the brave American heroes who have served our nation with courage and sacrifice, including your late father, James Henley, whose service and legacy continue to inspire us every day.
That's right, the Brown Bomber. Joe Louis was more than just a world champion. He was a true American hero, a symbol of strength and unity at a time when our nation needed it most, both in the ring and on the battlefield. And as we honor him today, I can't help but think of my late father, James Henley, who also served our country with pride and courage. Men like them remind us what real dedication looks like. Sue, Joe's story is particularly poignant for our show, because a scam here wasn't a slick con artist in a boiler room. The antagonist in this story was, in many ways, the United States government itself, or at least an inflexible and at times corrupt bureaucratic machine. It's a story about how systems designed to ensure fairness, like the tax code, can become instruments of injustice when they lack context, compassion, and common sense. It's a tragedy not of malice, but of institutional blindness, which can be even more terrifying. We're looking at how a man can be celebrated as a national hero with one hand, while the other hand of the same nation is systematically dismantling his life.
Exactly. But here's the part of the story that fits our show. Despite everything he gave, every sacrifice he made, he ended up in this just heartbreaking, decades-long battle with the IRS.
Yeah, this episode is really our way of saying thank you to Joe Louis and to every veteran who's ever worn the uniform. His story is this incredible and frankly tragic reminder of how sacrifice, patriotism, and bureaucracy can just collide. It shows how even our greatest heroes can be treated so unfairly when they just fail. From my time conducting financial investigations, I can tell you this is a classic recipe for disaster, but on a scale that is almost unimaginable. Usually you see this happen because of a single greedy manager or a fraudulent accountant, but with Joe Louis, it was a confluence of factors. First, you have the sheer complexity of the tax code, especially during wartime, with its astronomical rates. Second, you have a team around him that was clearly out of its depth, making fundamental errors in how they handled his income and donation. Third, you have an IRS that was rigid, uncompromising, and as we'll find out later, suffering from its own internal corruption. And finally, you have Joe himself, a man whose defining characteristics were generosity and trust, the very traits that made him so vulnerable.
And Joe Louis wasn't just another boxer. He was really America's fighter. This was a man who helped unify the entire nation during the Great Depression, and then again during World War II. It's just so hard to believe that the same country that cheered his victories would be the one to later chase him into complete financial ruin.
And that's the duality that makes his story so compelling and so heartbreaking. He was a symbol of American strength and unity, a black man who transcended the toxic racism of his era to be cheered by everyone. He stood for the American dream. Yet behind the scenes, that same dream was being turned into a nightmare by red tape and legal technicalities. It forces us to ask a really uncomfortable question. What does it mean when a country venerates a hero in public while financially persecuting him in private? It's a deep-seated hypocrisy that I think we are still grappling with today in different forms. And, you know, from my own experience in IRS criminal investigations, I've seen it firsthand. I've seen what happens when people, even really good people, just don't have the right advice or the right oversight. Tax law is, well, it's a beast. It's complex and it's unforgiving.
Right. It's not something you can just guess at.
Not at all. And the tragedy in Joe's case was that this wasn't about dishonesty. He wasn't greedy. It was the opposite. He was generous to a fault. He was trusting and he was deeply patriotic. And for all of that, the system just punished him for it.
So let's rewind a bit and set the stage. Joseph Lewis Barrow was born in Alabama in 1914. His family were sharecroppers. I mean, talk about humble beginnings.
The absolute bottom of the economic ladder at the time.
Right. And when he was still a boy, his family moved to Detroit as part of the Great Migration. And that's where he found boxing. Or maybe boxing found him. By all accounts, he was quiet, humble, and just devastatingly powerful in the ring. They called him the Brown Bomber.
And you know, Sue, that kind of background, coming from poverty, and then suddenly being thrust into the limelight with huge amounts of money, it's a classic recipe for vulnerability. You don't have the financial education, you're surrounded by people who claim to have your best interests at heart. It's a dangerous situation for any young athlete.
It's hard to overstate what that journey meant. The Great Migration was one of the most significant demographic shifts in American history. Millions of black families moved from the rural South to the industrial North, fleeing Jim Crow laws and seeking economic opportunity. But what they found was often just a different kind of hardship: crowded tenements, dangerous factory jobs, and rampant discrimination. For Joe Lewis to emerge from that environment, to find an outlet in a boxing gym, and to rise to the absolute pinnacle of his sport, he wasn't just a success story. He was a symbol of resilience for millions of people who felt forgotten and oppressed. He proved that greatness could emerge from the most difficult of circumstances.
It's a phenomenon I've seen play out dozens of times, though rarely with this stakes high. We call it the sudden wealth problem. An individual goes from having nothing to having more money than they can comprehend overnight. They are immediately surrounded by a new ecosystem of people: agents, managers, financial advisors, long-lost relatives, and so-called friends. They are told, "Don't worry about the money. You just focus on your talent." This creates a dangerous dependency. The athlete becomes isolated from the very decisions that will determine their entire future. They sign documents they don't understand, they approve expenses they don't scrutinize, and they place their trust in people whose primary interest is often maximizing their own commission, not ensuring the athlete's long-term security.
That makes sense. He was focused on the fighting, not the accounting. And let's be honest, that vulnerability was amplified by race. In the 1930s and 40s, a young black man, even a famous one, would have had extremely limited access to trustworthy, sophisticated financial institutions. The same systemic racism that limited his housing options and social mobility would have also limited his access to top-tier legal and financial counsel. He was forced to rely on a small, insular circle of managers and promoters, and that made him a perfect target for mismanagement, whether it was intentional or just born of incompetence. He was operating without the safety net that a white athlete of his stature might have had.
Exactly. And by 1938, Joe Lewis wasn't just a boxer, he was a household name. He held a heavyweight title for nearly 12 years. That's a record. 25 successful defenses, 68 wins, 54 of them by knockout. Just staggering numbers.
Wow. But the moment that really defined him, the one everyone remembers, came on June 22, 1938. He was facing Germany's Max Schmeling.
And this wasn't just a rematch. Schmeling had beaten him 2 years earlier, which was a huge upset. But this time was different. The whole world was watching through this heavy lens of politics.
It was America versus Nazi Germany, playing out in a boxing ring. Nazi propaganda was claiming Schmeling's first victory as proof of Aryan racial superiority. The pressure on Joe Louis must have been just immense.
The Nazi propaganda machine, run by Joseph Goebbels, was incredibly sophisticated. They understood the power of symbol. After Schmeling's first victory, they held it as proof that the Aryan race was physically and morally superior. They edited newsreels to make Schmeling look like an unstoppable Teutonic warrior. They conveniently ignored the fact that he was a friend of the Jewish boxing promoter Joe Jacob. To the Nazis, the truth was irrelevant. Schmeling was a tool. His victory was a weapon to be wielded against the democracies they despised, particularly America, with its multiracial society, which they viewed as degenerate.
It seems like a fundamental flaw in the ecosystem of professional sports and entertainment. There's so much focus on developing the physical talent, but almost none on developing the financial literacy needed to manage the rewards of that talent. Joe Louis was the ultimate example. He was trained to be a warrior in the ring, but he was left completely unprepared for the battle he'd have to fight with ledgers and tax forms. And that, as we'll see, was a far more punishing fight than any he faced on the canvas.
Unimaginable. He wasn't just fighting for himself or for a title. He was carrying the weight of American democracy and dignity on his shoulders.
And that put Joe Louis in an impossible position. He wasn't just a boxer anymore. He became a political figure, a warrior for democracy. The American press, which had often been critical and racist in its coverage of him, suddenly rallied behind him. He was no longer just the brown bomber. He was America's champion. You had editorials in the New York Times framing the fight as a battle for freedom itself. Can you imagine carrying that kind of weight on your shoulders as you walk into a boxing ring? The fate of the free world resting on your fists? And then what happened?
2 minutes and 4 seconds.
That's it.
That's it. 2 minutes and 4 seconds later, Schmeling was on the canvas. The brown bomber had struck. The crowd at Yankee Stadium just erupted. It wasn't just a sports winsuit. It was a profound moral victory.
And for the first time in years, you had black and white Americans celebrating together in the streets. He really did become a symbol of national strength, of dignity.
The reaction was electric. It was one of the most listened to radio broadcasts in history. In Harlem, people poured into the streets, dancing and celebrating all night. But it wasn't just Harlem. In small towns across the South, in the industrial cities of the Midwest, white and black Americans celebrated together in a way that was almost unheard of at the time. For one night, Joe Louis's victory allowed the nation to transcend its deep racial divisions. He had not only defeated the Nazi symbol, he had, for a brief moment, united his own fractured country. But, and here's the turn, even at the absolute peak of his fame, the seeds of all this future trouble were being planted.
He became a vital political asset to the United States. President Roosevelt himself met with him, famously telling him, "Joe, we need muscles like yours to beat Germany." He was used as a powerful symbol of American ideals, a walking, fighting refutation of Nazi ideology. Yet that symbolic value never translated into practical support when he needed it most. He was valuable to the powerful as a hero for propaganda posters, but completely disposable as a man with complex financial problems. It's a classic case of being celebrated but not supported, because Joe Louis wasn't a businessman. He was a fighter. He trusted his handlers, his promoters, his accountants, and sadly, it seems like some of them, or maybe a lot of them, weren't really looking out for his best interest.
Right. And from a financial investigations point of view, this is the absolute classic setup for disaster. You've got multiple income streams, managers controlling all the payments, charitable gifts that aren't properly structured. I mean, without extremely tight accounting, chaos follows. It's inevitable. And for Joe Lewis, that chaos came in the form of the IRS.
It was less a single overt act of theft and more a death by a thousand cuts. A combination of negligence and taking advantage of his trust. Then World War II breaks out. And Joe doesn't sit on the sidelines. He could have. He was the heavyweight champion of the world.
Precisely. It's the banality of financial ruin. For example, his longtime manager, a man named Mike Jacobs, was known for structuring contracts that heavily favored the promoter, himself. The purses were huge, but after Jacobs took his cut, and after paying for training camps, travel, sparring partners, and taxes, the amount Joe actually took home was a fraction of the headline number. Furthermore, his generosity was legendary. He was known to pay off the mortgages of friends, buy cars for relatives, and hand out $100 bills to strangers. His team did nothing to manage this or structure it in a tax-efficient way. They just let the money flow out because as long as he was winning, the money kept flowing in. It was a completely unsustainable model. He could have easily gotten a deferment, but no. He enlists in 1942, achieves the rank of sergeant.
And he did more than just enlist. He fought nearly 100 exhibition matches for more than 2 million troops. And this is the key part. He donated his entire fight purses to the Army and Navy relief funds. He gave his money, his time, his spirit, everything.
And here is where the story turns truly tragic. Joe, like any reasonable person would, believed those donations were tax-free. He thought giving his fight purses directly to the military counted as a patriotic charity.
And he didn't just donate the purses from two fights, he donated the purses from a fight against Buddy Bear, which netted the Navy Relief Society over $87,000, and another against Abe Simon that gave over $47,000 to the Army Relief Fund. In today's money, that's well over $2 million. This was not a token gesture. This was a man at the peak of his earning power, giving away life-changing sums of money because he believed it was his patriotic duty. He saw other young men being drafted to fight and die, and he felt that giving his money was the least he could do. Of course, I mean, who wouldn't think that?
But the IRS ruled otherwise, and this is the technical part that ruined him. They said the money counted as income first and a donation second. In other words, he owed income tax on money that he never ever kept.
Wait, just stop for a second. Let that sink in. You give every single penny to support the troops fighting a world war, and then your own government comes back and tells you you owe taxes on it?
That's it. And to make it worse, the top tax rate back then was close to 90%.
90%? So he essentially owed the government almost as much as he had given away. That's insane.
It is. And then you add penalties and interest, and it just becomes an avalanche. Once interest starts compounding on a debt that large, it's nearly impossible to escape. And here's the fatal error. The mistake his managers made, they had the promoters pay the money to him first, and then he donated. The logic of the wartime tax code was that the nation was in an existential crisis, and every part of the economy had to be mobilized. The government needed vast sums of money to build planes, tanks, and ships. The high tax rates on the wealthy were not just about revenue, they were about social solidarity. It was a way of saying that the rich were sacrificing their treasure, while the poor were sacrificing their blood. The tragic irony is that Joe Lewis was doing both. He was sacrificing his treasure through his donations and his blood, sweat, and tears by serving in the army and performing for the troops. but the tax code was a blunt instrument, incapable of recognizing that nuance. It saw income and it taxed.
And that's what triggered the income rule?
That was the fatal error. You know, from my CI days, I can tell you once the flow of funds is mishandled, intent no longer matters. The IRS enforces the letter of the law, not the spirit of it. The paper trail is all they see. If they had structured it so the promoter paid the relief funds directly, this might have all been avoided. But they didn't.
Such a small mistake with such catastrophic consequences. So after the war, Joe Lewis comes home a hero, but the IRS is waiting for him.
So if his managers had just arranged for the fight promoters to pay the Army and Navy relief funds directly as a donation from the event itself, he would never have been liable for the income tax in the first place. It was simply because the check was written to him and then he wrote a check to the charities that this entire nightmare was created. That one administrative step, they were. They claimed he owed hundreds of thousands of dollars, and with the interest and penalties piling on, over time that debt grew to more than $1 million.
$1 million in the 1940s. That's like, what, tens of millions today? An unfathomable amount.
It was an impossible number, but he didn't run from it. He faced it head on. He tried to pay. He agreed to have his future fight purses assigned directly to the IRS, but the interest and penalties just kept growing faster than he could earn. Bureaucracy doesn't know mercy, Sue. It only knows math.
And the interest and penalties were brutal. The IRS in that era was not in the business of negotiating or making payment plans. If you owed money, they expected it. And every day you didn't pay, the debt grew. The interest compounded, and the penalties for late payment were severe. It created a debt spiral. Even if Joe had been able to pay the original tax amount, the accumulated penalties and interest made the total sum impossible to overcome. He was trapped in a financial quicksand, and the more he struggled, the deeper he sank.
That's the heart of the tragedy. It's a concept in tax law known as constructive receipt. The moment he had control of the funds, even for an instant, it became his income. Had it been structured as a direct contribution from the promoter, it would likely have been a non-taxable event for him. This wasn't a hidden, obscure rule. It was a fundamental principle of accounting that any competent financial manager should have known. Their failure to grasp this or to seek proper counsel on it was an act of professional malpractice on an epic scale. It was a multi-million dollar mistake made on a single sheet of paper.
So he had to go back to the ring, even past his prime. In 1950, he fought Ezard Charles just to raise money to pay the IRS. And then, the really tough one, in 1951, he had to face a young, undefeated Rocky Marciano.
Yeah, and that fight ended with Joe on the canvas. It was more than just a loss. You could see he was exhausted, not just physically, but emotionally and financially. It was the end of an era.
It's just so tragic. He had fought for his country, he fought for the troops, he fought for freedom, and now he was literally fighting his own government. As you said, that's a fight no one wins.
That fight was a symbolic execution. Rocky Marciano was the new face of boxing. A young, ferocious, undefeated brawler. Joe Lewis was 37, well past his prime, and carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders. Everyone knew how it would end, but Joe had to do it. The IRS took almost every penny he earned from it. Marciano himself was said to have wept in his dressing room after the fight because he had just beaten his childhood hero, and he knew why Lewis had been forced to take the match. It was a dark day for the sport. No, you can't win though. Eventually, he retired for good from boxing, but he still had to earn a living, still had the IRS on his back. He worked for a time as a professional wrestler, which is just...
Oh, the indignity.
Right? And later, he took a job as a greeter at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas.
The Brown Bomber, the man who brought a nation to its feet, was now just shaking hands with tourists for a living. It's heartbreaking.
Okay, but now here's where the story gains another layer of just unbelievable irony. You can't make this stuff up. And it's critical to understand that the financial stress took a severe toll on his physical and mental health. The constant pressure, the public indignity, it directly contributed to serious heart problems that plagued his later years. Beyond that, he also struggled with cocaine addiction and severe paranoia, which at one point was led to him being institutionalized. It's the unseen, tragic final chapter of the story, the mental and physical breakdown of a man who was once the pinnacle of strength, worn down by decades of relentless financial and emotional pressure from the very system he fought to defend.
And after that, his options just dwindled. The indignity of professional wrestling, which at the time was seen as pure lowbrow spectacle, and then the job at Caesar's Palace. He became a kind of living exhibit, the great champion reduced to a tourist attraction. It's a powerful and sad statement on how America treats its heroes once they're no longer on the pedestal. Their sacrifices are remembered in speeches, but their struggles are often ignored. Oh boy.
The IRS commissioner, the head honcho, during much of Joe's ordeal, was a man named Joseph D. Noonan Jr. He served from 1944 to 1947, right when Joe's tax issues were blowing up. Well, years later, Noonan himself was convicted of tax evasion for the years 1946 through 1950.
You are kidding me. You have got to be kidding. The man leading the entire tax enforcement agency was cheating on his own taxes while they're hounding Joe Lewis.
And Noonan wasn't just convicted. He went to prison. He was found guilty of evading over $90,000 in taxes by failing to report income he received from a wartime contractor. So, while his agency was meticulously dissecting Joe Lewis's patriotic donations to find a tax liability, Noonan himself was engaged in common, greedy tax fraud. The hypocrisy is so profound it's almost comical, if it weren't so tragic. The man tasked with upholding the integrity of the nation's tax system was a crook, while the man being treated like a criminal was a paragon of civic virtue. That's right, the hypocrisy is, well, it's stunning. Joe Lewis, a man who gave away his wealth to help his country, was hounded relentlessly, while the man at the very top of the IRS was breaking the very laws he was supposed to enforce.
I'm speechless. That's a level of corruption that's hard to wrap your head around.
And Noonan wasn't alone. The entire agency was apparently riddled with corruption back then. His successor, a man named John B. Dunlap, ended up having to fire more than 160 agents as part of President Truman's effort to reform the agency. So while Joe Lewis was drowning in penalties and interest, the IRS was literally cleaning house from within.
From today's perspective, it's just unbelievable. Can you imagine the outcry if social media existed back then? A story like this would go viral in an hour. It paints a terrifying picture of an agency that was, at the time, fundamentally broken and corrupt from the top down. When the institution responsible for enforcing fairness is itself rotten, who can you trust? It creates a chilling effect. If they could pursue a national hero like Joe Lewis with such rigidity over a patriotic act, while their own commissioner was a common tax cheat, what chance did an ordinary citizen have against a rogue agent or an unjust ruling? It's a stark reminder that the integrity of our institutions is not guaranteed. It has to be constantly fought for, audited, and protected. They wouldn't have let the IRS destroy him like that.
No way. Today, transparency and accountability work both ways. Celebrities, veterans, they can defend themselves in the court of public opinion online. Institutions can't just hide behind closed doors anymore.
And that's one of the biggest, most crucial differences between Joe's time and ours, isn't it? Back then, he just didn't have a platform. There was no Instagram, no GoFundMe, no Twitter army to rally support for him. There was just silence and shame.
And remember, there were no nonprofit safety nets either. There weren't any veterans advocacy groups to help people navigate complex finances, no pro bono legal programs for heroes in trouble. he was utterly alone against one of the most powerful agencies in America.
Absolutely. Today, a story like his would be a multi-part documentary on Netflix. There would be a change.org petition with millions of signatures. Every news channel would be running segments on it. The IRS would be forced to hold a press conference to explain themselves. The public would not stand for it. But back then, information was controlled. The narrative was shaped by a few powerful entities. Joe Lewis had no voice in that narrative. He was a subject of the story, not a co-author.
And that's a critical point. The support infrastructure that exists today was non-existent. There were no organizations like the Wounded Warrior Project or Tunnels to Towers that provide financial and legal support to veterans. The idea of pro bono legal services for someone like him was not widespread. He was facing a government behemoth with its army of lawyers and accountants, and on his side, he had the very same advisors who had gotten him into the mess in the first place. It was a completely asymmetrical battle.
So what happened in the end? Did they hound him to his grave?
Well, in 1960, the IRS finally forgave the remaining debt. But by then, the damage was long since done. Decades of his life had been consumed by this fight.
So Joe Lewis never recovered financially. Still, through it all, he remained gracious, humble, and proud. It's just a testament to his character. But what a hollow victory. Forgiving the debt after he was old, broke, and his health was failing, it's like apologizing after the damage is irreversible. For over 20 years, this cloud hung over his head, dictating every decision he made, forcing him into fights and jobs that were beneath him. The psychological toll of that kind of sustained pressure is impossible to calculate. It's a classic case of justice delayed being justice denied.
Incredible character. And when he died in 1981, he was buried at Arlington National Cemetery with full military honors. Think about that. The same man who was once vilified by tax collectors was now being honored as a national hero, a soldier.
As he should have been all along.
And his burial at Arlington was actually secured by the intervention of President Ronald Reagan. His old rival, Max Schmeling, even served as one of his pallbearers. It was a final, powerful recognition from the highest levels of government and from his peers that his life meant more than his tax troubles. It was the country finally choosing to remember the hero and forget the debtor. It was a moment of grace that was tragically overdue. A year later, Congress posthumously awarded him the Congressional Gold Medal. At long last, his country officially said, "Thank you."
It really is fitting that we're sharing his story now, during Veterans Day week. It's such a powerful reminder that patriotism can come with a heavy price, and that not all sacrifices are made on the battlefield.
So let's fast forward to today, Sue. The big question is, could something like this still happen?
That is the question. What do you think?
I think in some ways, yes, but in other ways, no. The specific circumstances, the wartime tax rates, the paper-based accounting, the lack of media transparency, those are things of the past. It would be very difficult for an injustice of this exact shape to occur. However, the underlying vulnerabilities are timeless. We have athletes today getting caught up in cryptocurrency scams, elaborate Ponzi schemes, or simply trusting a charismatic but fraudulent financial advisor. The tools of the scam change, but the exploitation of trust is eternal. So while we might have better safeguards, we also have more sophisticated predators.
You know, I'd like to believe no. I really would. We have stronger oversight. We have digital transparency, better financial education, and a much higher degree of public accountability. Modern heroes are athletes, soldiers, celebrities. They are generally protected by better systems. And if a gross injustice like this did happen, the public would know instantly.
You're absolutely right. Just look at the shocking number of NFL and NBA players who declare bankruptcy only a few years after retiring. The statistics are staggering. They get surrounded by a new ecosystem of advisors pushing high risk, high commission investment opportunities. Things like restaurants, tech startups, or speculative real estate deals. These are often just ways for the advisors to enrich themselves at the athlete's expense. The star is left with a failed business and a massive tax bill. The language has changed from fight purses to investment portfolios, but the fundamental scam, exploiting trust and financial illiteracy, is exactly the same destructive force.
That's true. Social media can amplify outrage, yes, but it can also amplify truth. Joe Lewis might have had millions of supporters defending him online. Like we said, fundraisers would have popped up overnight to clear his debt. TV hosts and, well, podcasts like ours would be fighting in his corner.
We'd be all over it. And that's progress. But it's also a crucial reminder that fairness requires vigilance. Even in our modern world, we still see people victimized by complex systems they don't understand. The details change, but the theme is the same. Whether it's taxes, crypto scams, or sophisticated financial manipulation, trust without verification is always dangerous.
And that's really why we share stories like this on Behind the Scams. They're not just about fraud or deception in the typical sense. They're about human vulnerability. Joe Lewis's generosity and his patriotism made him a target of an unthinking bureaucracy. His trust in the wrong people became his undoing.
My years in IRS criminal investigations taught me one hard truth. The government can be right on paper and completely wrong in principle. Joe Lewis owed taxes only because the law, as it was written, couldn't see the spirit behind his actions. And that's a lesson modern policymakers should always remember.
Exactly, and that's the core of so many of the stories we cover. The scam isn't always a deliberate, malicious plot. Sometimes it's a system that allows a person's best qualities to be turned against them. For Joe, his patriotism, his generosity, his trusting nature, these are all admirable traits. But in the context of a complex financial and legal world, they became liabilities. The system wasn't designed to accommodate a hero like him. It was designed to process numbers on a form, and his story was too human to fit into those boxes.
And it's something every taxpayer should remember too. If you earn money, if you donate, if you give to others, keep records, seek professional guidance, protect yourself. Good intentions do not erase bad accounting.
That should be on a t-shirt. Ultimately, Joe's story teaches us that being a true champion isn't just about winning fights. It's about perseverance and grace in the face of profound injustice. And in Detroit, the monument of Joe Lewis's arm and fist still stands, powerful, unbending. It's not just a symbol of his strength as a boxer. It's a tribute to his endurance as a man. Such a perfect metaphor. A fist, a symbol of his power in the ring, but also a symbol of defiance and resilience. It's not a statue of his whole body, just the instrument of his fame and, in a way, his struggle. It stands there today as a tribute not just to the heavyweight champion, but to the man who took every punch, both in and out of the ring, and never, ever stayed down for the count. And maybe today, with all our awareness and technology, we can make sure no hero ever has to face what he did.
Here's to Joe Lewis, the Brown Bomber, the soldier, the patriot, the man. May his story always remind us to be fair, to be vigilant, and to always, always honor those who serve.
Thank you all for joining us for this special Behind the Scams Veterans Day episode. And it must teach us that honoring our heroes cannot just be symbolic. It can't just be statues and posthumous medals after they're gone. It has to be tangible and timely. It means creating robust systems that protect them when they are vulnerable, providing them with the essential tools for financial literacy, and demanding that the institutions that are supposed to serve them do so with fairness, flexibility, and compassion. Joe Lewis gave everything he had to his country. His country, in return, should have given him more than just a bill.
If you or someone you know has faced financial exploitation, tax issues, or scam victimization, please visit stampoutscams.org, scamtv.org, and of course, behindthescams.org for more stories and resources. This show is part of the SOS Media Network.
Until next time, stay informed, stay vigilant, and stay scam-free.
Joe Lewis's story is a heartbreaking American tragedy. A man of immense generosity, a patriot who gave everything he had to his country, was ultimately undone by a system that couldn't see the hero behind the numbers. A simple, catastrophic accounting mistake turned his patriotic donations into a crippling tax debt. For decades, the Brown Bomber was forced to fight not for glory, but against the very government he had so proudly served. His legacy reminds us that honoring our heroes requires more than just statues. It requires fairness, compassion, and a system that serves its people. For more information, visit stampoutscams.org. For more exciting podcast episodes, visit behindthescams.org. Thank you for joining us.